real life
superpowers.
I put this pressure upon myself because I said, okay, you write that you're the number one copywriter in Israel. You have so much to learn. Let's work super hard to make sure this is true. Okay, so it worked like an exterior motivation to push me to avoid public humiliation, basically, which I am very fond of, this kind of motivation. And secondly, I thought to myself, okay, what's a practical way to do so? Okay, so what I did was to translate each day 3,500 words of the best sales letter in history, of the best copywriters. And I told myself, okay, you're going to do this for the next 3 years, every day, doesn't matter if it's a holiday, if it's a weekend, if it's a work day, if you're sick, if you're healthy, if you're bored, if you're in Israel, doesn't matter. 3,500 words will be translated. That really built my confidence within myself, and I really became an expert very, very quickly at what I do, and I really became the best copywriter in Israel.
Welcome to Real Life Superpowers. Noa Eshed and Ronen Manipaz here. In this episode, we speak with Idan Waller. Idan is the founder of the 10 Million Club, one of the most coveted business consulting companies in Israel for SMBs. Through the club, Idan has changed lives, helping 10x the paychecks of thousands of entrepreneurs. He's a diehard digital entrepreneur, growing up working with the best business minds, marketers, and copywriters in the United States and Israel. He's also a leading local Israeli podcast host. His latest metamorphosis was breaking into tech, where he and his brother founded Blue Throne, a startup that acquires product-market-fit consumer apps from indie developers and small studios, and then grows them into iconic companies. Let's dive into his journey.
Real life.
Superpowers. Superpowers.
Idan, welcome to Real Life Superpowers.
What's up, hey guys?
What are you up to these days?
What am I up to? What am I not up to, actually? We're growing as a company. We've grew from 40 people to 80 people. So we're a remote first company as well. So what I'm dealing with right now is the challenge of how to do DNA at scale. But that's just the latest endeavor. So there will be many more. There were many more.
Yeah, by the way, there's so much to unpack because when you say we, you're talking about you and your brother, which is fairly unique. And that's something that we will probably want to touch. But let's take a step back for a second. We'd love to discuss your journey. Like, let's start from the beginning. What type of house did you grow up in? Because before you were an entrepreneur, and you still are, in many ways, a coach and a very ambitious one. You help people set goals at a very high standard and then achieve them. Take us there.
Cool. Mediocre is the holistic answer to your question. I was a mediocre, not bad, not good, not great, but mediocre in the middle. In every important aspect of a child or a kid or a teenager, which is school, sports, girls, women afterwards. So that was my experience. I was mediocre at everything.
Like, what's bad at being mediocre at everything? That's bad.
That you're good at nothing.
But you're not bad at anything.
I think it's a lot more important and satisfying to be better at one specific thing and be bad at everything else than to be in the middle of everything else.
Okay, so what motivated you to become better at one thing? Like, what's your chip on your shoulder then?
That as an introvert person, people might not see me today and think, oh, he's introverted. But introverted people learn to look, to observe really well. Extroverted people, and if you have a growth mindset, you can also apply to yourself some of these behaviors. So you can, like, talk from a stage and do podcasts and be in the public eye in some sense. So I always looked at the more extroverted people and was super jealous of them.
Why? What did you want to be? Like, why were you jealous of an extrovert?
Because in some sense, I knew in my mind that in order to be successful, to achieve what I want in this life, to fulfill myself, to fulfill my potential, or whatever, I need to excel at something. I don't care what. I wasn't too picky about it. Just something. If it was naturally sports, then I would gladly have it and become a footballer. But nope. Two bad knees don't make you a professional footballer, I guess. So I needed to find something else. And so that was this huge gap within myself that I grew up with. And then at a certain stage in the army, actually, I realized that my brains and my all my observation during the years can become this super force. And that's exactly what happened.
Were you in combat in the army? Because this is a process, obviously, that...
I was in the Navy, and I have an interesting story to tell you about how I discovered this, because it might sound too good, like how I presented it. What actually happened was that I was in the Navy. The Israeli Navy works like the U.S. Navy in the sense that you've got the regular soldiers, combatants, and you've got the commanders. And these are not these are totally separate, okay? Whoever becomes a commander, it's called chovlim in Hebrew. He's just on a course to be a chovel, to be a commander, and whoever is a soldier is on the course to be a soldier. Like, it's not like in the regular army that the commanders are grew from the regular soldiers. So, what happened when I was at the Navy, I don't know how it is right now, but when I was there, like, that was long, 20 years ago, I guess, was that there was a huge disconnect between the experience of being a regular soldier and a commander, okay? They were like the kings and they're expected to be treated as such. And I wasn't in the mood to let that happen, not at all. So I became like the leader, but like a negative leader from the sense of the whole organization, because the soldier like did whatever I said them to do. And that wasn't being seen as very positive thing by the commanders and the commander of the ship, of the Navy. So yeah, so I got I'm holding the record for the most trials, punishments for a regular soldier in the Navy until today. I've got 15, and if you say it's not enough, then I would say that you should multiply it by 30 days or 35 days of detention each of these 15, so you can see that I didn't see much of home. But then I realized I can lead people from this positive, negative experience. And it opened the gates to my understanding that, hey, I'm not good with somebody else telling me what to do, and especially not explaining me why I should do it. So I better be an entrepreneur. So I better build myself as an entrepreneur.
But then, because you were describing a sense of mediocrity pretty much all throughout life till you joined the army, and then within the army, this sort of rebel inside you, and perhaps also your ego, because you weren't you weren't in a status that maybe you wanted to be. And then through that, somehow this leap and finding a path in life. And I'm trying to understand, because it has to be more than realizing that you can lead people. Like, did you really feel that you have no skills till that stage?
No, not skills. Mediocrity doesn't mean you don't have skills. It means your skills are not enough. That's what it means.
Not enough. That's not true. Mediocrity means, listen, you're going to be okay. See, this is what intrigues me about what you're saying.
No. I disagree.
Why is it?
That's your experience. Okay. For me, it's a fucking disaster. For me, it's a death sentence to be like everyone.
Oh, okay. So let's talk about that. By the way, for me, I've never been, I was awful at a lot of things. Most things I was actually really bad at when I was in school. So in my opinion, I'll say this, I understand why I had a chip on my shoulder. That was a disaster. I couldn't take it. Why is being let's call it normal. I don't know if it's mediocrity. I think, why is normal so scary for you?
Because you're not special at anything. In this life, in order to excel, in order to achieve what you want, you have to be really good at one, at least one specific thing. Really good, excel at, right? Like a 9 out of 10, let's say, maybe even 10 out of 10. You'll see these statistics everywhere. We know that 90% of businesses fail within the first 5 years, right? We all heard that. And if some of our listeners will look at their investment portfolio, they will find out that the same applies there if they invest in like a specific stocks or crypto or whatever. Okay, this is like the rule of the universe. So you have to excel. You have to find something, at least one thing that you're really good at, or develop yourself to be really good at. I'm sure by observing you.
Yes.
I'm sure you were awful at a lot of things, but you were also very good at maybe sales, charisma, selling your ideas. That's the sense I'm getting from observing you.
Fair enough. Thank you. But I'll tell you this on that sense. So that inhibition is this. So I'll tell you for me, and this is like, this is a great way to ask you a question. For me, being awful was the greatest present I could get. Why? I don't think I would be successful if I wasn't awful. Okay. Because I struggled and everybody said, that I'm stupid. It motivated me to become very, very smart. Now, usually those awful things are the present because there's a price to pay. So let's talk about you for a second. I'm bridging it to you. When there's a price to pay, that means from becoming mediocre to not meeting friends, working all day, like getting those skills and practicing and getting no's and yeses, there's a price to pay, right? And for someone mediocre, it may not be. For me, it was a disaster. It's easy for me. It's either really bad or get your shit together and get good. For the mediocre, I'm looking for it. What was the trigger to see I'm going to pay the price to be amazing at what you're going to do, which you are?
Again, for me, being normal, achieving like a growing up to be like this very bad scenario, of very big picture in my mind of being this fat dad with, I don't know, a 40-year-old with this stain on the shoulder. And shitty job that I hate and just surviving was a death sentence for me. From it was in my mind, in my psyche, since I was like fucking 12. Okay. I knew very clearly what I don't want to be. I didn't know what I'll become. I didn't know where to aim. I didn't know a lot of things, but I knew what I don't want to be. So that was like this horrible scenario for me.
What did your parents do?
They were both like employees. My mom in insurance, my dad in tech.
Were they? I'm not talking about how great parents they are. I'm just saying, were they the scenario that you didn't want to be in?
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. My dad really loved what he did. He developed the Israeli satellite program in the Technion. My mom was a very good mom. They always let me do what I wanted. They always let me fulfill my dream, chasing after my dreams, even though I fucked up many, many times. Not at all. It wasn't.
They believed in you.
In a way, motivation not to be like my mom or my dad. Not at all.
Wait, okay.
It was something internal. I don't know the source of it. I can't explain where it comes from. It just was all in my psyche. You are normal, you are mediocre, you are in the middle of everything. You are not the top 1% or top 10% of zero scales, okay? That's not good. Let's become fucking good. That's what I grew up with.
Tell me if you can relate to this, because I understand what Ronan is saying about being horrible at stuff. And then I can also understand that feeling that there's got to be more to life and that you can be something great. And I remember I felt that way, for example, doing a law internship in one of the largest firms in Israel. And I think looking around, a lot of people felt that that status and being a part of something big and, you know, being able to say I'm a lawyer at I felt like around me, for some people, that was fulfilling. And I also see it like in the United States, it's even more hardcore. You know, people are like working all day till endless hours in some firm of consulting, or, you know, in an accounting firm or as a lawyer, and they get like all these fat paychecks. And it seems like that to them, that is a good life. And I remember also once I heard a podcast and Peter Thiel, I think it was talking about how lucky he was that he was a lawyer, and he was lucky to hate it enough. And he was describing walking down the corridor with that box the day that he quit, and having some people look at him in that jealous look, and realizing the luck of hating what he's doing. And I'm wondering if you can relate to that, in the sense of maybe it's not entirely mediocrity. Maybe it's just like something being average, even if it's an excellent average by some of society's metrics, versus that feeling or voice inside of you that just knows there's something greater out there for you.
I think firstly, I can relate. I think secondly, we're kind of bridging into the world of being an entrepreneur, right? Creating your own fucking world. That's what being an entrepreneur is, right? You don't work for no one and you get to create your own world. Now, how successful you are, how big is this world that you can create financially, team-wise, impact-wise? That's another case. That's a good point, you know, because I remember I used to work in some shitty jobs. Like when I was 16, I worked at McDonald's. And when they told me to smile while I was cleaning the tables, I'm like, okay, bye. I'm not here. And other shitty jobs like that. So I thought to myself, okay, I'm not really good at getting like instructions for other people. Not really good at having other people deciding what I should do. And that's like, even with my first company that got an investment when I was, that was 11 years ago, they kicked me out of there really quickly because I just couldn't do nothing. I was like paralyzed because I wasn't the one who with the hands on the strategic wheel. Like I had my own ideas for what the company should do. They decided differently. And from that very second, that was the end for me there.
But that sounds like something else. It sounds like you believe in yourself. You always believed in yourself that you're more than that. Not that you were mediocre. You were mediocre in the way people perceived you, but not how you perceived yourself.
That's a very good observation.
Yeah, so that's the thing. You're misplaced. So that's sort of like what I was saying. When I think I'm very smart. When they said I was stupid, I didn't feel stupid. I didn't feel like I was in different, think different, creative. So you're misplaced.
Yeah.
It's a different frustration. That's the chick.
That's how you define it. I define it as being mediocre with a horrible feeling that this gives me, but this doesn't make your observation untrue.
We're excited to be collaborating with the Israeli website CTech, owned by Kalkalist, Israel's leading business newspaper. CTech is the gateway of the Israeli high tech to the tech world and vice versa. If you're not already a regular reader, we strongly recommend that you check out kalkalistech.com, kalkalistech.com, to stay up to date on all high-impact stories from the Israeli tech scene. What do you find out, because you were talking about, you know, paving your path towards doubling down on what you're good at and finding that one thing, and that you need at least one thing in life where you're the 9 or 10 out of 10, what did you discover?
Well, the only talent I grew up with in life was my writing ability. I always knew how to write really well. My father forced me to read books since I was like 5. So when I was
good,
I already read 1,000 pages English high-level books. So I kind of knew how to write as well.
This is at the age of 5?
No, then when I was in the army, I reached the level of a 1,000 page book.
Okay.
We built that for it. Okay. And I also developed the ability and the mind to write really well. So I worked in a music companies that I wrote the lyrics for some songs. I had a translation business. I had a academic assistance business in which we help students to do their final degree seminarion in Hebrew, like the thesis. So I always had this talent within me. And when I learned that you can combine this writing ability plus psychology, and then you can become a master salesman from one to many, not one on one. I'm not knocking on no one's door. I'm not picking any phone. I'm a master salesman of selling one to many. This is what the internet provided me. That's the biggest blessing I got in my life, the ability to do so and still use the same abilities in what we do today in Bluetone. That's when things kind of clicked for me. Again, writing plus psychology equals lots of money, sales, growth. I can help myself. Afterwards, I can help many others. That was a very, very good present that I got, that I discovered actually along the way after a lot of pain, suffering, and persistence.
Okay, so let's talk about the psychology aspect of it, okay? The rating I get. Now, you said psychology with internet.
Okay? Yeah.
So let's give an example, like in Blue Throne, where you're helping applications grow, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. How does the psychology help you out there?
Well, okay, basic thing that every listener can also use. What drives us in life as humans is two motivations, not one. Towards motivation, away motivation. Towards motivation is, hey, I wanna climb that mountain to, I don't know, to watch the view, whatever. Away motivation, which also makes me run even faster to this mountain, to this hill, to conquer it, is shit. Somebody is chasing after me with a gun. Okay, so I have to run away. In practical terms, like if I would want to sell, I don't know, like. Give me something to sell. I'll give you an example.
Okay, so are we selling something physical or internet?
Whatever you want, anything you want.
Okay, a fishing rod.
Cool. Okay, towards motivation, I want to get that fish. Okay, away motivation, I want to prove to my dad that he said that he's the master of fishing and I'm shit at fishing, that I can that I can do much better than him.
Okay, now I'm going to change the idea. I'm going to say this. Let's say it's a game on application on iOS, a new game, like a new Brawl Star game. What would be the away motivation?
Away, win this reward. The away motivation, beat your friends.
Gotcha.
Okay, now if you operate this kind of feeling meter in your heart, you will actually feel it physically, that the away motivation in most cases is much stronger to drive people forward. So when you use away motivation and towards motivation in your messages, okay, in your messaging, within the app, in the paywalls, in the CTAs, in the call to actions, then you drive many, many more people to do whatever you want. And that's just a small example.
So you're actually saying this. You're actually saying the psychology around it is that people don't especially know what they want or want to pay the price of things that they want. But if they have an incentive, it'll be clear why they prioritize what they want. External incentive is bigger than internal incentive.
No, towards motivation can also be super external. Like I want to open a business to be rich. Okay,
Dan, I think in many senses,
okay.
About brain chemistry also and the triggers that very initially drive us.
What I discovered was that away motivation drives 70% of the people. Okay, so it's like twice as strong as towards motivation. So that's something you can use. Now you can look at your landing pages, you can look at your paywalls, you could look at your call to action and ask yourself, am I using towards motivation? Is it all like a goody two shoes, come and get this, blah, 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 you know, very cute. Is my marketing, like, I think the governing question here, is my marketing cute or is my marketing effective? Okay. And I'm going for effective any given day. Now, regarding what you ask, the human brain is built from three different brains, actually, which is the neocortex. It's what makes us human, rational thinking, the limbic system, which rules our emotions, and the reptilian brain, which is the most agent brain. And this is the most powerful brain as well. So when you learn to talk about to this reptilian brain with different tools and triggers, then you get more people do whatever you ask them to do online. The most common example is like lots of in my former company, we had like the biggest consulting company in Israel for digital based businesses. Okay. So whenever they bought something for me, and many did, they said, okay, but we will buy it anyway, but why do you use the scarcity methods? Why this timer in the page? Why only six left? All this bullshit. Like, why? We would have bought it anyway. And that's untrue, okay? Because you quickly discover that once you use these tools, you sell more. More people sign up, more people buy, more people buy the upsells, more people do even, that's in the impact world, do whatever you ask them, because there's a deadline, because these are the most powerful triggers we can use on the human brain, because we work on the reptilian brain, this is the most ancient brain, and even if you're aware that this is happening to you, you will still do it. Because why you want to? I give you an example. Champions League final, Juventus. I'm a Juventus fan. That's a football team from Italy. We reached the Champions League final in 2015 and 2018. In both times, I tried to purchase a ticket in the, like the tickets that are on the market. Of course, you cannot. So you go to Viagogo. That's a website that sells you tickets for a very high price. Okay. And you're like, oh shit, okay, then like, let's see what kind of deal I can get here. But then they start to pull all these tricks on you, and I'm a marketer, okay? I created so many campaigns that use the exact same tools. I'm seeing it front of my eyes, but I still went ahead and purchased this ticket for 5,000 euro each. Why? Because I wanted it, and because it works. Even if you're aware of it, it still works.
Yeah, it's all about understanding the human needs and tapping into them.
But because it's true, you know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, you're a real fan of Juventus. So it is true. Even it's not a, see, the thing is, the semantics of it, saying trick is a funny word, because it's actually, when you say, it's a cute, I'm saying, when you say affected, I'm just saying you're talking to something that's true. You know what I mean? Like, if someone buys something because they're scared, it's true that they're scared. You know what I mean? So you're working on something that's...
Yes, yes. But at the same time, you also realize that it's not 100% true, okay? There are
probably the gauge,
many right. more tickets than they show you, okay?
I understand.
There's not really 1,000 people on the page that fit and purchasing the ticket with
It's the difference between true and ethical, right? It's true that they don't have many tickets, but it's not ethical to say how many. I get it.
It's the art of evoking emotion and driving people to take action that you want them to take.
Yes, that's the art of pushing people to take the action you want them to take. And the truth is that in the real world, real life, you have to push people to do whatever you want them to do. That's the truth. If you just let them decide for themselves and you have this... La La Land attitude about your own business and your own company, you're in deep trouble, my friend. Deep.
Although you are the same person that said not long ago that if someone told you what to do, you would move on. So let's talk about that for you. So who tells you what to do?
Who tells me what to do? I pretty much paved my own path. So I tell myself what to do, even if I don't want to do it.
How did you do that? Most people don't know how to do that.
Because look, I didn't lie to myself that I am good enough. When I got abysmal results or mediocre results, I told myself, you're not good enough. And that's the fucking truth. Okay. Face it. That's fine. Okay. Many people are not good enough. You are one of this group. Let's work hard. Let's work harder than anyone else at what you're good at. And develop the super skill. And let's do what nobody else is want to do, agree to do, even capable of doing to become so good. For example, when I first learned about direct response copywriting, that's the world that I started to go from. That was my initial success, where first I saw big money, I saw big success, I saw that I have an impact, that can, my talent can, is real. It's not just something in my head. I told myself, okay, let's become the number one direct response copywriter in Israel. What do I need to do that besides just voicing it? Because I did voice it with in front of thousands of people in my email list. So firstly, this I put this pressure upon myself because I said, okay, you write that you're the number one copywriter in Israel. You have so much to learn. Let's work super hard to make sure this is true. Okay, so it worked like an exterior motivation to push me to avoid public humiliation, basically, which I am very fond of, this kind of motivation. And secondly, I told myself, okay, what's a practical way to do so? Okay, so what I did was to translate each day 3,500 words of the best sales letter in history, of the best copywriters. And I told myself, okay, you're going to do this for the next 3 years, every day, doesn't matter if it's a holiday, if it's a weekend, if it's a work day, if you're sick, if you're healthy, if you're abroad, if you're in Israel, doesn't matter. 3,500 words will be translated. That's the first thing you're going to do. So doing this like huge weightlifting of developing a skill, if this is, I feel, a good way to look at it. Like you go to the gym every day and you don't work out for 45 minutes, you work out for 4 hours, okay, every day. Really built my confidence within myself, and I really became an expert very, very quickly at what I do, and I really became the best copywriter in Israel.
That is really interesting, and it's very Japanese. You know that in Japan, in martial arts, they give you the belt before you're actually at the skill level, and then you have to prove yourself
really?
With you. So you sort of put Japanese nice. There.
Yes, I'm very fond of using suffering, pain, and the fear of humiliation as a driving force for myself.
Renan, your question, who tells him what to do? He is his own boss, and he's a strict one, probably a stricter boss than anybody else who could be externally. But then, Idan, you also do have to be accountable to other people. You're working with your brother, which is very interesting because that's a very sensitive dynamic. And your startup has investors that you have to report mm-hmm. to. So how do you go against your natural incline in that sense and are able to politically manage dynamics and be able to nurture important relationships in your life?
I'm not there in my mind. I'm totally not there. Like I listen, okay, once I learned that I can actually be successful, that I started making money, that pushed me from survival in Tel Aviv in a very small apartment and Ola Hadasha wife, my wife came from Holland to here. Once I pushed myself to this thriving mindset, that actually means you have to make like some sort of amount. When I was like 27, when I was at the beginning of my 30s, it was about $25,000 profit per month. That put me in a whole different spot. Okay, then my mind opened up to receive criticism, and I encourage criticism. I always tell people, stab me from the front. Not on the back, stab me from the front. I can take this. It's not nice. It's never fun, but always stab me from the front because I wanna get a real sense of where I'm good, where I suck. And the more you grow in business, you realize you suck at more things. That's fine, okay. And things that you thought you're good at, suddenly there's a new level to conquer. Shit, okay. I didn't see that coming. So let's be very honest. So along with building confidence and having trouble to receive like instructions for other people, if this is an advice, okay, and not an instruction from somebody I respect, of course I will consider it and I will think about it very deeply. And in some cases, always there's something like this that I'm working on to improve myself. For example, right now, I'm working on my ability to be more connected to data because I'm like a creative person. I've got all these instincts and hunches. And the worst thing is that I'm usually right. Okay. But we're in a tech business and my brother is 1000x better than me in being connected to data. He's like, well, the way that I think is to write, like to use a free flow diary and just writing my thoughts, and then I get observations that or directions what we should do in the company, or smelling the smoke before the fire. My brother does the same with data, and I'm so far away from it that it's disgusting.
Why don't sort of complete each other? Why do you need to go there? Does he try to be more
creative? We do complete each other. No, I have to become better. I will never be at his level. That's fine.
It's a different stage. I think what happened is this thing. There's a superpower of having the creativity in the beginning when you're starting to structure a company. There's a big advantage of being creative and smelling and having those instincts. When it's bigger and it has to be managed, you can't touch everything and you have to be data oriented. It's like it's a stage where it becomes very important.
True. So the way for me that like recognizing what you suck at, what you're not naturally good at, is a really good starting point to improve. So for example, I know that I suck at data. I know that I will never log into Metabase to find new data and to like do whatever my brother does. So you know what I did? Because I suck, I arranged myself in WhatsApp a dashboard of all the important numbers. How it's intruding my private life. I don't have a huge fan of opening these messages and look at the data, but I still do it every day because I want to tick all the messages, like, you know.
Right. Yeah.
But and then my mind is exposed to the data, and then I can synthesize everything with my creativity, with the data that I got, and now push the company to grow faster and recognize problems faster and everything.
Yeah, I think you have. There's a new terminology from this conversation. I'm going to call it "hug the suck."
So it's half a Hebrew lesson here.
Oh, exactly, hugging the suck.
Oh, hugging the suck. Okay, okay. Yeah, I think Dan has a high discipline and the ability to hug the suck, and even sort of drawn to it because of the opportunity that lies behind the suck.
Guys, to grow, you must suffer. Okay, that's the honest truth. Come on, let's not beat around the bush.
Right.
Oh, you must have.
Right. Even the cliche when you're in a, you know, you're exercising, when it hurts, it's when you're growing.
Yes, you break down the muscle, and then when you sleep, the muscle builds as a stronger muscle. Yes, to grow, you must suffer. That's it. So I became an expert at suffering, and I'm thriving when I suffer. I really like to suffer when it's, of course, leading me to a result that I'm looking to achieve, because I know there will be suffering. Like this movie, there will be blood, there will be suffering. Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. Okay. Why should we run away from it? When you walk towards suffering, when you walk toward your fears, when you walk towards pain, you win. When you run away from them, you lose, because they wait around the corner with a fucking bet. Okay. That's how it is.
Although in your copy art, then you would be writing how to, at least the subtext would be how you're going to help them avoid the suffer. And in your mentality, you will be drawn to, you will go to.
Depends. When we had this, when we had the company here in Israel, the consulting company, I was always very, very direct with my followers and different entrepreneurs that learned from my ways. I always tell them to grow, you must suffer. This is painful. Aggressive growth is not for everyone, really not. And I'm not just saying this to create a motivation for you to join, because you can't have it. This is real, okay? If you connect to me, then you will discover. But when I sell in apps and stuff like that, of course, I will use whatever tools I've got to sell.
Different dimensions here, because I'm certain that when you work with people, because you're direct, and I'm sure you're direct and honest. But I guess
tough love is the only love.
That's true.
Almost everybody love these senses besides my wife.
Well, that's fair. That's fair enough. Speaking of family, how did you end up working with your brother? Is he also always mediocre until he wasn't?
Not at all. My brother is the model of a good boy. Okay.
Older brother or younger?
Younger, but he's older mentally. I'm younger. So anyway, he was always the successful kid in the family. I'm like the black sheep. So he always had good grades. He was also, he was, if I was mediocre at everything, he was good at everything. Not exceptional, but good at everything, but at everything, okay? So he went to work in El Al, which is the national aviation company of Israel, and he worked there for many, many years abroad. And then he wanted to move to another position, and he got the job. So he went to Thailand. His wife began to learn architecture there in the best university. So they kind of settled in. So they brought him to do a course in Israel to start his position. Then he got fired immediately because there was something. We still don't know what happened. Something that doesn't smell right in there. Let's just say like this. So he was kind of broken. He didn't know anything else. He was working again for an employer, being an employee for all of his life. But then I'm like, told him, Alon, come. Let's go to the beach. And we sat on the beach in La La Land, which is kind of funny. It's a nice place in Gordon Beach in Tel Aviv. And I gave him a notebook and I told him, write the date of today. So we wrote the date of the day. So we flipped the page, write the date of next year. So we calculated how much money he would have made in the first year in this work. And I told him, okay, let's double it together this year. And I promise you, this is the best day you had in your life. You think currently this is the worst day, but this is your best fucking day, and I can guarantee it. Let's write it on the page. We still have this notebook. It's not a bullshit story. It's real. And then I knew at the time there was a big opportunity in doing Amazon FBA fulfillment by Amazon. It really worked. It was the beginning. It wasn't saturated back then. So I gave him my money. I invested in him. I invested my time as well, my guidance, my connections and everything. And I thought to myself, okay, I'm fine with losing this money. Maybe there's a slight chance he will become an entrepreneur and this will work. If it's not, that's fine. I've got the resources and I try to help my brother and failed. That's okay. He will find a job. That's fine. Who little did I know this would be the best investment I ever did in my life, this initial $10,000. And he became a really good entrepreneur and a different entrepreneur than I am. Again, he's more data driven, he's more day-to-day driven, he's more practical driven. I'm more like strategic, big picture, creativity, break the pattern, break the box once there is a box. So it worked really well, and we grew up together as partners since 2016.
And how did you know what to even guide him? Was this instinct?
This is something that I've done for many, many years, even before, because after my success in campaigns, in running really big campaigns as an affiliate and then a super affiliate and then a product launch manager of the whole operation, which could, I think at our peak, there would be over 1,000 promoters, affiliates for every product or product launch that we did together. So I ran some of these projects from 0 to 100. People ask, a lot of people, entrepreneurs, internet marketers, PPC people, agencies, they ask me, how do you achieve these results? Like, how could that happen? Teach us. So I just taught them. I did my copywriting course. It's called the Armor Piercing Copywriting. And then we opened a consulting company. So I worked with many, many entrepreneurs.
When you say we opened the consulting company,
I had a student in my copywriting course. His name still is Mano. And he learned from me the art of copy. And he was like a business coach. And he told me, Dan, look, you don't give enough value, or you can give much more value. Why do you teach them only how to market things when you have so much experience in how to build a product line, how to build the whole funnel, how to connect all this internet crap to actual business strategy that allows you to grow, okay? Because... each soul, each entrepreneur, each each business person is actually a human being, okay? And different things, different marketing channels fit different human beings. Somebody will be really good at podcasting, somebody will be really good at reels or shorts or whatever. Somebody will be a great writer and he just need to write an email list, and then that's the key to fortune, okay? That's the key to success. By observing so many people and helping them, and in the first years before I got too tired of it, like I used to really be happy because I knew how to shift my mind to make their problems my problems. So for example, if somebody joined one of our coaching programs and I saw they're not on the right course to achieve the goal, I'm like, okay, I invited them to a meeting. So I really dug into their soul and find out why. Okay, because there's always a why. Because the marketing channel is not good enough, because they don't even feel confident enough with what they actually do. They say they're an expert at X, but they don't feel so at the depth of their souls. So the marketing sucks. The message doesn't go through because they're not confident enough, and people read this very, very quickly, by the way. So for example, for a person like this, part of the coaching program, program was devote 2 hours in a day to hone down your abilities, to really learn about what you say you're an expert at. So we also had this, but for the other end, we had experts that weren't confident enough. They were super experts, but the marketing sucked because they said, oh, no, people would discover me naturally. That's how it works. And I'm like, no. You have to become really good at marketing. The package has to be real good. And the product has to be really good for you to grow on a consistent basis, okay? Not to be one trick pony or never hit something. So there's a lot of different psychology, a lot of different people, lots of different types of entrepreneurs that I got to learn. That and when we scale this coaching program, what happened was that suddenly there was a need because I don't touch everyone anymore. I don't connect with everyone. I don't know everyone in a deep personal manner. I had to systemize my knowledge. So we hired like an expert in this field. So they interviewed me and we found there, for example, there are 4 types of entrepreneurs, and this entrepreneur will do here very good. Marketing will be easy, but product will suck because they wouldn't pay enough attention to the product, or the other way around, or another, lots of different cases. So when you push people, when you push entrepreneurs to succeed, you have to mind the entrepreneur, of course, the soul, the person, the unique soul that you have in front of you, right? And then only then, when you take this into account, it's not only business strategy. You have to paint the business strategy and the marketing channels and the messaging and everything else around the persona, around the soul that stands in front of you. So when you ask me about my brother, I had so much experience back then. So and you can really know, right? You can know very quickly. It's like when you hire an employee, after 2 weeks, you know if it's a bust or it's a star, okay? That between us, okay? That's how it is. So same here. I gave him my instructions. I saw that he applies them very quickly, that he comes up with his own shit as well, that he doesn't come to me for every little thing that doesn't go well, that doesn't work. And I'm like, okay, I might have a star here. What's my time? What's my investment? It's my brother. Like, this is the greatest gift that business gave me, because my relationship with my brother wasn't close before this incident. Not at all. We had different walls. Like when we sat in Passover in the family table, and I just told my family what I'm doing, that I'm leading people forward and they're selling the stuff because of my advice and my courses and my knowledge, blah, blah, blah. He thought I was lying. He thought I was scamming people.
Wow.
Because he didn't know such a word exists until I brought him one evening to a webinar, because I needed him to see it in his own eyes. So he sat behind me, and we've made like $60,000 in 1 hour and a half. And for him, it was like, holy shit, this is real. There are real people on the other end. This is not a scam. This is a real product. Okay, this is possible. So also a good business lesson is that if you want to push to the next level that you're currently looking to break through, go and see somebody doing it in real time. Go and see with your own eyes. Be exposed from the driver's seat to these things, and then the belief happens.
I mean, this sounds like you are exactly in your element when you talk about this, and there seems so much value in being able to push people towards their element and fulfill themselves. And yet you were discussing getting tired of it, and clearly you moved on.
Very, very good. I know where you're heading. Sorry for cutting you off. Look, this a personal brand business is awesome for huge profitability, making a lot of money, keeping a lot of money, okay? Having a great impact. People recognize you on the street, take selfies with you, they tag you on the Instagram post. Lots of positive ego involved, okay? If you can take it in the right way. Yet, you're their energy source, okay? People suck energy out of you at any given seconds, and more people do so all the time, okay? So at a certain point, you don't have enough energy anymore. That's what happened in my case. And when I realized, okay, my energy level is not as high as it was, because I keep like helping other people. And when you help another person doing conversation, even through writing, through replying their emails or something, they take a small bit out of you. Something, some sort of, some amount of energy out of you, which is okay. This is wonderful. Okay. This is a fair exchange. But when it becomes too much, and when I realize that, okay, I've got this aspect that I don't like, I don't feel as energetic as I was, I don't feel as passionate as I was about helping the same level of entrepreneurs with their problems, because I solved these problems many, many times before, and it doesn't excite me anymore. And when I'm like, okay, can I do $100 million exit from this as well? No, okay, because this is not a scalable business, at least here in Israel. The answer was pretty clear. I need to test myself, because let's see, like the thoughts that went through my mind was, let's see if all the bullshit that you tell them, okay, you can do it, you got to push hard, you got to face your fear, blah, blah, blah. Let's see you now, after you gain success, now that you have lots to lose, you have millions of profit in a year to lose, okay? Let's cut it off, because in order for something big to grow, you need to cut it off. You cannot continue and... because nothing will grow. That's the curse of entrepreneurship, the curse of focus, okay? That you have to do one thing, one business really, really well if you want to really be successful in it. Otherwise, it's all mediocre, and I hate to be mediocre. So let's see you. Let's see you. You're 37. You gained the most success you can in Israel, okay? You won. Fine, you won. That's it. That's everything you can achieve in this life. You loser. That's how I talk to myself. You loser. That's it. You become a local mentor in Israel for businesses. Fuck that. No. Let's try more. You can always return if you fail in the big wild world, if you fail with your tech business, if you fail to play in the Champions League of business, you can always go back to the local league and be a star. That's fine. Let's try. Let's cut this cord. Let's start from being a white belt again in tech. And let's see how you handle this.
What belt are you now?
Ooh.
I think I'm going to help you on that one. I think he always wants to be a white belt in the new kind of league. As long as he can continue to go to the new league, he'll be a white belt in the new league.
Yes.
Compared to the landscape.
Compared to the landscape, I wouldn't say because it's a we, because this is already like when they tell you to hire people that are smarter than you. In tech, that's the first business setting. I realize how true this is, because it's not really they're smarter from you like in a holistic way. They're smarter in product or in a certain product or in data or in tech, which I knew nothing about when we started this 3.5 years ago. What kind of belt? I would say we're a blue belt. We're cool. We're profitable, which is very rare for a tech business, apparently. We passed the $10 million ARR mark. We have a lot of growth ahead of us with our own products right now. But we have a lot to learn as well. We have a lot to learn. Like mainly our greatest difficulty right now, the thing that I'm working very hard every day to create a huge change in the company, is the DNA at scale. Because before, when we were like 40 people, before this year actually, it was us founders and founding team working with the ICs. Fine, you get a lot of impact, you can move them fast, that's fine. Since we hired 40 more people that are actually C-level, higher management, general managers of the different companies, app companies that we own, you have to walk through them. And each one have their own interpretation of what you say, and their own mindset and the way they used to do things, and bring them all at once, which was a needed move, created a lot of friction in the company, a lot of communication problems in the company. We're also a remote first, so we don't work in an office altogether. So I needed to first like agree to tackle this challenge, because I didn't like it at first, not at all, because I felt like I felt out of my element. I never did it before, and I'm used to impacting people by my own behavior, not by the systems I create, but my personality, behavior. That's something I did a lot and I feel really comfortable with. But now building systems in a company, communication systems, clarity system, transparency systems, motivation systems, leadership systems, OKRs, like goal systems, whatever. That's something that I never did before. And that's something that it's also, you don't get results super quick. It takes time. And I hate the term, it takes time. Every cell of my body like shivers and get a very bad feeling when I hear somebody tells me it takes time, because let's rush things. So that's what we call it currently facing. I feel that we're doing well. Once we recognize this is a problem, that the problem is internal, we should focus internally on the company to make it grow and not externally, which is something that we did all the time. We get first signs of oil, of heating oil. Good results. People are suddenly, our GMs are having workshops to their teams about our values. This is something that never happened before. Yet, I'm sure it's not the end of it. I'm sure we've got a lot more to learn.
Does it help to have experienced investors in this puzzle?
So XT Hi-Tech is our leading investors, okay? And they're a real mensch. I don't know how to put it in English. It's in Hebrew term, but that means they're real business people with spines, with a very good understanding of how real businesses work, which means you have to make a profit. It helps that we have this mutual understanding, natural mutual understanding, that this is a real business, and we treat Bluefon as a real business. We're business first, tech second.
You go to VCs and angel investors? Like, what does it look like?
We don't talk the same talk, because we have a different business model. We are not one product with one exit strategy or exit plan. We're actually a company that acquires other companies for a few million dollars and then grow them to either EBITDA companies, cash cow companies in other words, or diamonds. Diamonds is a company that you can later sell for a strategic multiplier, like a 10x multiplier, 12x multiplier, something like this. So we don't have one exit point. The plan here is to sell the golden eggs, not the goose, okay? And that's something that traditional VCs don't understand. They know their play. They keep looking for the same companies over and over again. And that's fine, because currently we don't actually live on equity, but we look for debt. We work with a few debt facilities, banks, companies, whatever. And they understand our game better, because this is a real business game. There is a profit. You can pay from the profit the amount of debt with interest, and then you continue with your life.
So it sounds like, as with anything else, you're doing it the Dan way. And that's a sort of segue to ask you, what's your superpower?
My superpower is growth, is to look at a company or a business or an entrepreneur or a bunch of founders and understand, instinctively understand after questioning them a bit, how do they grow? What's needed to grow? Maybe it's copywriting, maybe it's marketing, maybe it's a focus, maybe it's working shit internally, okay? Like what we're facing with, that's why I'm dealing what I'm dealing right now. Because I know, okay, you're in charge of growth here, you're in charge to make this business better, faster, bigger, every month. Okay, that's my goal. It doesn't always happen every month, unfortunately, but it happens definitely on a quarterly basis. What's needed to happen here? And whatever the answer is, like I can really quickly understand what needed to be done and guide the entrepreneurs or companies or businesses through it.
And your kryptonite, your weakness?
Currently, I would say it's loving data. I'm okay with data at the moment. We're friends, but we're not like super tight. We don't wake up in each other's bed every morning, not at all. so that's in our context as well, as in what we do, that we grow apps. So data is super important. We have great data people. So I have to find ways to force myself to be exposed to data in a way that I cannot ignore it, and then it enters my mind, and I can synergize it with whatever I do well.
Hey Dan, it's fascinating to think where you'll be in a few years and what your new white belt will be at whatever stage that you pave your growth into. But one thing is very evident, that at the end of the day, you're setting those goals and then finding your way how to get them. And that's really unique and inspiring.
Thank you very much, Dan. You also had some really good, sharp observations in here, I must say.
I appreciate it. And I'm with it. I'm hugging the experience and hugging the suck. Keep on growing with pains. And thank you so much for your time.
For sure. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
That's all for today's episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please consider subscribing to our podcast so you never miss an episode. Also, if you have a moment, we would really appreciate it if you could rate and review our podcast on the platform you're listening to. This will help others find our show. And as always, if you know anyone who you think would enjoy our podcast, please share it with them. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back as usual on the first of the month.
Real life.
Superpowers.
Life.
Superpowers.